Tech is a bi-weekly podcast exploring the intersections of technology and ministry. It is part of the podcast network sponsored by Wells, the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Our show today is hosted by Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Welcome back to Wells Tech, everybody. This is episode 771, and we're recording it on March 5th, 2026. My name, Martin Spriggs. Show about technology and ministry, that's what you're listening to, and joining me in that conversation, as usual, Sally Draper. Hello, Sally.
Good morning, Martin. Happy to be joining you today. March 5th is a pretty significant day in Sally Draper's history.
Is that right?
Today is the third anniversary of the day I had a spinal stroke and was paralyzed by that. And I just couldn't help but know that when I woke up this morning, it was on my mind. And I think it does have some application to technology and ministry, or ministry in general, that when you experience something like that, and when your life changes in a way significantly because of your health, or your health determines, you know, your path, it does make you see the world differently, and make you need or have needs in the world that are different. And just being able to continue to worship when I was paralyzed, to be able to have people supporting me in so many ways when I went through that medical challenge, and then to kind of come out of it and have kind of a new life that's framed by medical challenges and stuff. It makes you appreciate, you know, and see things in a different way, I guess is the best way I can describe it. So,
yeah. I think we see it from afar, and then we see it up close and personal. And
right.
They're not always the same thing.
That's correct.
But regardless, you can witness God marshaling different forces at different times in our lives. And that's it's kind of neat to see him
true.
Work through the stages of our life, right?
Very true. And blessed beyond measure. That's all I can say about it. It's just, and blessed. Special shout out to my spouse, Kevin, who's just stood by me and held me and picked me up on many occasions in the last 3 years. So really appreciate his help through all of this.
One thing that hasn't changed is the energy and the expertise that you bring to this podcast. Podcasts for 771 times we've done it, and that's kind of neat. That's a living history of technology in the Synod and our relationship with it, and some of the things that we talk about. So one of those things that's hopefully a decent segue, one of those things that we've been talking about a lot that has impacted many of our lives is AI, and that'll be the topic for today. In fact, we felt it so important in these ministry conversations that we had a whole summit on AI. It was probably about a year ago, maybe 13 months ago. We met in Florida with about 35 other people to talk about, what is this AI thing, and how does it impact, or how could it impact ministry, and what should the Synod be doing corporately related to AI, both in the teacher and pastor space, but across ministry in general? And I'm almost thinking, Sal, I'm trying to think back 13 months ago, and some of the things that we talked about are even different today than they were then. AI and technology has progressed at a pace that I've never seen before. And we've been talking about this for many, many years.
Yeah, for me personally, in my day-to-day work for the Synod, I literally Am happy to ask questions of AI to assist me with my various tasks that I need to do. And it's becoming more and more integrated in what I do. One of the main software pieces I use allows me to query data with the SQL language. And the most recent update just has it so baked in. It's suggesting amazing things to me to assist me. And I can see that some of them aren't exactly what I need or aren't exactly accurate with the suggestions, but it's pretty darn smart and it does help me out in my day-to-day work life. So I'm definitely seeing the impact of it.
100%. Yep. Yeah, me too. And one of the things that came out of that summit was the recommendation that a smaller group, a more focused group, a task force, if you will, could be formed of representative individuals of Senate agencies. And that's what we did. We built a task force of seven people, eight people, I think, in total, include myself. We meet once a month and we kind of set our trajectory at 1 year. We didn't want this to go on forever, and we'll determine what happens after 1 year. That'll come, I think, the end of this summer. We met for the first time last August, I believe. And we've been working and working and working, and a couple of the things we've already produced a couple things, but we're today really we're launching a couple of kind of milestone type resources that we'd like to share with our audience, and we're going to share with other people as well for feedback. Kind of a request to take a look. Are we on the right track? What questions do you have? And some of those resources that we've been working on are what I would call more foundational. So the first document, resource that we created that we'd love for our audience to take a look at and give feedback on is what's called an eth what we call the AI ethical framework. And technically, the doc, yeah, what is the document called? I got to open it up here. The document is entitled The Ethics of Artificial Intelligence in the Spiritual Realm. And the committee stands behind it and feels that this is a resource, but I will give credit specifically to Professor Steven Geiger from Wisconsin Lutheran Seminary, who was kind of the mastermind and really did a lot of the heavy lifting for this document. And I'm not going to go through this, word for word, but maybe just to talk about some of the big sections in it. So essentially what this is it's trying to frame AI in the context of God's word. What does God have to say about some of the things that some of the issues, some of the questions, some of the assumptions that AI makes in the life of a minister of the gospel, a pastor, a teacher, a staff minister, a church leader? What does it have to say, and what are some of the things you should keep in mind as you consider using AI, or how you use it, or when you use it? And also things like, transparency and disclosure and those kinds of things. So one of the first sections, I think there's three big sections. One of them is entitled From One Human to Another, and it talks about the importance and uniqueness of human to human interaction, which obviously is something that AI tries to imitate, but it really can't. So it's something to understand as a limitation of AI and something to be careful with as we maybe are tempted to replace human to human interaction with AI. And there's lots of different examples of how that might take place. Another subsection of that is accountability. Any non-human presentation of divine truth. So when we're talking about AI and ministry, we're talking about God's word, of course, in some contexts. So any non-human presentation of divine truth presumes the ability of a human to be responsible for and accountable for the content of the presentation. And then we talk a little bit about the role of the Holy Spirit in this section. Authentic voice was kind of a big topic. I'll talk more about that when we get to, things like sermon research and Bible study prep, those kinds of things. Perception is something that I think all of us need to deal with as we're using AI to communicate and produce materials. It can increase efficiency, but we need to consider its perception if it's known that AI was used in the creation of content. So we talk a little bit about that. And then finally, transparency. If we use AI, how transparent should or do we need to be that it was used and in what context and in what ways? Which is a nice segue into the next big section, which is basically personal responsibility. So, what are you, if you're using AI, what are you responsible for in the use of it? Accuracy, privacy, using it correctly, keeping your skills up to date so you know how to use it. And then finally, we close the whole document with a little section on implementation. Two of those subtopics are patience and trust. And I think those are big ones as we think about AI in our circles and the importance of understanding the motivation and the use of AI by those people who are using it. So I would really encourage everybody to start with this document. Again, it's mostly an outline form and it's a quick read, but it kind of calls and brings to the front kind of relevant passages that you should consider and think about as you're thinking about should we use AI? Is it what are the ethical questions? So
Very
that was our
good.
first document. What do you think, Sally? You haven't
Yeah,
seen this before,
I
so.
haven't. This is brand new to me, and I'm very excited to see it and dig in and read through the different points. I think, as a Christian, this is a great starting point. Like, let's talk about what it is and what God's word says about the use of various tools like AI. So,
Yep.
good stuff.
One thing the committee really talked about and thought about pretty hard was, is it a benign, just another technology tool? Is it like social media, or is it like, web technology, or is it something different? And I think we came to the conclusion that it's something different, that it consumes, it advises, it creates, it produces. All of those things are things that a knowledge worker, like a pastor or teacher or staff minister or church leader, does. So I think where do we go with this? I think that's the real question, right? That's hopefully what some of these resources that we're providing provide assistance to. Let me jump quickly to the second document. I don't want to spend a lot of time because we want to encourage everybody to read these themselves and offer us feedback. Second document is called AI Stewardship and Risk Assessment Guide. So we thought, kind of a good practical tool that we could put in the hands of people as they're considering all the AI tools that are out there. So we're not just talking about generative AI or ChatGPT. A lot of people, when you talk about AI, you think, well, it's just this little chat box and this little chat agent that you use. But there's all kinds of AI tools. In fact, there's AI baked in almost everything these days. It's almost an arms race by every vendor and every producer of anything to put AI into it. So we created, and I'll give credit to one of our other task force members, Chris Cooper, who put together or largely put together this risk assessment matrix. And it's a typical assessment matrix where you have what you're talking about, what the guiding question is, and then some of the things that are examples of low risk, medium risk, high risk. So let me just give you one example. We use Doctrinal integrity is the first category. And the guiding question is, could the tool unintentionally shape the proclamation of the gospel? So the low risk, the tool supports non-doctrinal tasks, formatting a Bible study. Medium risk, the tool aids in communication and may indirectly touch on theology. And then finally, high risk, the tool interprets scripture or generates primary teaching. That's not to say that if it's in a high-risk category, you don't use it. It's just a slow down, be purposeful about it, think about it. There are other categories that we put on here: spiritual care, privacy, truthfulness, security, stewardship, witness, and verification are the big ones that we felt were worth putting in the matrix. And then we give a little bit of next steps and tooling about how, or instructions about how to use the tool, and some practical examples. So hopefully this document will be helpful as well as you're considering or assessing whether an AI tool belongs in the tool belt, or what degree of caution should be exercised in its use.
Definitely thought-provoking, and maybe some things would land in a high-risk category that would surprise us or whatever. So it's good to kind of consider these each of these angles: truthfulness, security, stewardship, etc., and give things more perspective on where they fall on that continuum there. That's awesome. I think you guys have done some good work.
So if you want to provide feedback, which that's the reason we're kind of pre-releasing this, so we're not announcing it to the entire synod, but certainly to our podcast audience and a few select, we'll trot it out to different faculties and different areas of the synod for feedback. But we'd like you to use a feedback form. So don't just well, you can obviously give feedback to the show, but I'd like to get this in a usable feedback format. So we created a Google Forms, very basic, just trying to get all the feedback in one place so that we can make sense of it. So there will be a link in the show notes for that. So please use that link if you'd like to provide feedback. So Sally, that's what we've been up to.
Looks like a lot of good work. As I said earlier, that's a lot more than what we had when we started staring at this problem a year ago at the summit. And we all were like, yeah, we need some guidelines and things, but where do you start? And I think you guys have given it great consideration and put together some useful resources. So eager to dig
So
in.
we should remind everybody that there is an AI page on our Wells Tech show notes page. So if you just go to wellstech.wells.net/AI, that's where you're going to find, actually, you'll find links to all of our kind of AI focused shows that we've been doing lately. But you'll also find a link there to a Google Drive that has all the documents that we were just talking about. So it'll include them in Google Doc format and PDF format. So if you want to take them and do something with them, make them your own. We also have not just these guidance documents, but we have sample policies that we've been crafting and making available too. So that's the place to go. Sally, I think we're up to our picks of the week.
It is time for Picks of the Week. And this week I came across some interesting news. Actually, I was reading Kim Komando's daily newsletter, which I don't read on a daily basis because she just packs so much in there, it's kind of overwhelming. But I can always count on her to find some interesting things. And this one I hadn't heard about. It wasn't a big news splash, I don't think. But Apple kind of quietly announced that they have a new computer available, a new MacBook called the Neo. And the pricing is what's so shocking, because if you've shopped for an Apple MacBook, you know that the price starts probably around $1,100 on the very low end. But this new addition to the line is starting at $600. And if you're a student, the pricing is $500. So definitely lean into that if you're looking at it for a student's use. Anyway, what's interesting about it is it's using an iPhone chip. It has an A18 Pro chip in it, which is actually from the iPhone. So that's how they've managed to get it to a lower price point. It's got an aluminum case. It comes in four spectacular colors. I think there's silver, yellow, pink, and a dark indigo, they call it. So you have
I
color
think the pink is
choices.
called blush, actually.
Oh, okay. Get it right, Sally. Up to 16 hours of battery life, which is pretty great. It has a 13-inch screen, and they're really excited about their Retina display, which looks beautiful, of course. And because it comes from an iPhone, it actually syncs well with the iPhone, and is kind of a companion to the iPhone. So you can actually receive calls and text and, communicate via the MacBook Neo with your iPhone connected to it. Comes with two USB-C ports plus a headphone jack. And they kind of are putting it in this space as a competitor to a Chromebook. I think definitely less expensive than anything Apple's put out. And exciting to see them in this space, Martin. I don't know what you think of the Neo, but it looks like a good pick for a student laptop. They say it's good at, video and gaming even, they mentioned. I was kind of surprised that they put that out there, but your iPhone's playing games and having some pretty decent video as well. So then I guess this is a good companion to that. Actually, a lot cheaper than an iPhone even, but a good way to get computing in the Apple space with lots of neat opportunities there.
Probably much more durable than a Chromebook would be my guess. Apple products are made to last, and so that I think might be a good investment. When I first saw this, I thought, well, would this work for a lot of our teachers? And then when I looked at it a little bit more closely, I thought, yeah, a couple things. The RAM is only 8 gigabytes, so if you are a Chrome user with a lot of tabs open, I'm guessing it probably will chug, as maybe a Chromebook might too. So that would be one caution. Another that I've heard, and this depends on your use cases, is the keyboard is not backlit like a normal Mac would be. So if you work in darker places, or on the couch at night or whatever, that might be a problem. And then finally, the third caution is that those are USB ports. One is a 2.0, one is a 3.0. And they're not Thunderbolt like a regular Mac would have, so they're a little bit slower. But I think for the right person, and I think students are really the right kind of niche here. I think these are going to sell great. I think with a price tag, as you mentioned, if you are a student, you can get this for $499, which is not that much more than a Chromebook. And I think Chromebooks you can really count on to last maybe a couple years, 3 years, if you're careful. These, I think you're going to get a lot more life out of. And I think seem to have good cameras. The keyboards are always good on Macs. So I think this is a winner for that market. So, but I think if you're a teacher, I would still look at maybe the MacBook Air, which is in that $1,000 category. I think I want to say that it's probably,
1100, yeah.
twice as much, but you get quite a bit more. But this is exciting and fun colors.
Fun
So
colors, that's where
there you
it's
go.
at.
All right,
All
good pick. Is this
right.
one of these in your future, Sally?
I am not sure. I love the Apple space, but I've never been an Apple computer person,
That's right, you haven't.
so we'll see.
Okay, but I think there's good stuff here. All right, my pick. And I debated on like three or four different picks this week. I waffled back and forth, but one that I landed on is Excalidraw, Excali draw, Drew. And it is an open source charting tool. And one thing I really like about it is it's totally free. It runs totally in the browser, and the files that it saves are small and can be saved locally. You have all of the diagramming tools, your boxes, your lines, your arrows, your text. You can embed pictures. You can craft frames. I think in the past we've talked about a tool called Miro, which is not a free tool, at least if you want to use it extensively. Although there's some good nonprofit pricing for that too. But Excalidraw, if you just go to excalidraw.com, you're in the application. There's no sign up. There is a plus version, so a freemium model. If you want to save stuff to the cloud, you can do that. But it's perfectly fine just opening documents from your desktop or saving them down to the desktop. And we've used this a couple times in a couple of, I've used this a couple of times recently for an applications at the Synod. And it's so super fast, super simple keyboard shortcut. So all of the main tools have a number associated with them. So as you're wanting to hit the arrow tool number, the box, it's a certain number, and it's easy to drag around. It's simple to use. So any kind of diagramming that you need, so maybe that's a workflow, a network diagram, anything that you need for a project management process, I think this is an excellent tool. I've seen this embedded in lots of different things. I've used Obsidian in the past, which is a note-taking tool. They've got an Excalidraw plugin, which makes sense since this is an open source tool, can easily be added to different applications. But I found it's good right out of the box. All you need is a browser, and I just need to know how to spell it. You open it and you start charting. So I think this could be a great tool for anybody who needs charting, but also for students, because this would work easily on a Chromebook. You just need to go to the right site, and away you go. So excellent tool. It's really well done. It's been around for a while, but it's really well done.
Good share. Sometimes it just needs to be in a picture and it makes all the difference, and so that's a great way to do it.
Exactly. Sally, should we move along to our community news and feedback?
Sure. There's been a lot of discussion lately over on the Wells Intersections group on Facebook, and one thing I found really interesting was a discussion that was thrown out called Free for All Friday, where it's just like, ask your communication questions. Tell us what's on your mind, what you're challenged with, whatever. And the big discussion point, there were a couple that I thought were interesting. One was about who does your social media? Who does your web work? Do you do it with volunteers, part-time staff, full-time staff, called workers? Who's responsible? And what I thought was especially interesting was people were all over the board, or they were trying to figure out this exact question when it was asked. And some people said it's all of the above, that we have some volunteers, we have some staff, we have our called workers with their hands in it. One person said that they have a web company kind of on retainer. So if there's things that are over their head, they can easily go to this company for additional assistance. And that seems like a good way to work it. Like, you don't have to go to them to do every single thing on your website. You are empowered to do that. But if you need help, then you can go there. And then finally, someone shared some guidance that Grace Ungmach had released in the past. It was a template that she created in Canva that was around your brand, basically. And it was specifically for churches. So, creative direction for a church. Let's see if I can zoom this a little. And it's basically just a place to store all your standards. So, what colors do you use? And what are the color numbers for those? What typefaces do you use? What personality are you using as you do your writing and things? What's your avatar? What kind of things do you want to remind people of? What are your main call to actions? What's your contact information? Just kind of a centralized place to store all that information and reference all that information so that you know you're working within your brand to get your messages out whenever you're doing any kind of communication, social media, website, whatever it may be. So, a great tool from Grace. If you want to make use of that, I'll throw a link in the show notes to that template that's available on the Canva platform. Another topic in that same discussion was a reference to this article, and this is a survey done in the United Kingdom that says Gen Z is returning to religion and what their research showed them. Apparently, Carrie Newhoff had shared this in a newsletter. I think it was Pastor Peter Hagen who shared a little quote from Carrie that said, "This article looks at what's happening in the UK, and it's great news for churches. Ironically, while one of the reasons men are heading to church is their desire for in real life or IRL relationships, that human to human connection we were talking about, the way that they're discovering a church is still through a TikTok or an Instagram, a social media post, whatever flavor that might be, or a website. So it's not like you can get rid of the digital outreach in favor of these in real life relationships, but it's that the digital is driving people to come in person to churches. At least that's what they're finding in the UK for this age group, 18 to 25. I had a little personal observation. I think maybe this age group is surprising us a little, coming back to church and being involved in different ways. I was working on some paint classes recently, and a couple of high schoolers were involved, and they did not want their picture taken or put on social media in any way. They're very turned off to being exposed on social media or whatever. They're very protective, and I think that's great to see. And it's just interesting that that's what the result of all this digitizing is having on this kind of age range, 18 to 25, that they really are in favor of in real life relationships. So.
I noticed that when I was giving a presentation at the Lutheran Leadership Conference, we had a number of students there, which was great to see. We had a lot of Erie Lutheran High School send kids there. Same deal. I think it was kind of maybe shouldn't have been a surprise given research like this, but yeah, that came through loud and clear there too.
Interesting. One other thing we want to include in community news and feedback. It's from our friends at Concordia Technology Solutions, and they're behind Church 360, the older shepherd staff, which was kind of the early stages of Church 360, basically church management software. One of the components of their software is something they've titled Ledger, which is basically the financial side, tracking your offerings and budgets and things like that. They call it Church 360 Ledger, and apparently there's two versions of it out there, Martin. The old version is on a website that ends in .360ledger.com. The new version is on the church360.app platform. And knowing the difference, if you're still on a .360ledger.com site, it's time to get moved over to Church360 app. Apparently, there's no fees or anything involved. It's just a different platform that you need to get migrated to. And they've given an end-of-life date. That's June 1st of this year. So you don't have a real long time to make this change, but they're there to help you through the process. Beginning February 9th, they activated links across all their Church 360 apps to the new Ledger, and administrators can control the access and things like that. It means you don't have to go to two different sites to manage your data with Church 360. Members and ledgers are now combined in the one site, and there's some enhancements that come along with it for no additional cost. Things like payroll transaction types and enhanced reporting options, equity accounts, included in the chart of accounts, and equity-backed funds. So lots of improvements there, but the big message is it's time to get moved over. June 1st is the end of life of the old Church 360 ledger. So just wanted to announce that in case anyone listening is using that old version, now's the time to pay attention and get migrated over.
Very good. Thank you for keeping us up to date on that. Yeah, Concordia is a great partner, and I know a lot of our churches use Church 360, and I know our church does, and it's an essential part of our ministry. All right, Sally, I think we've done enough here. We are going to gather again in a couple weeks, and we are going to welcome our friends, Jason Schmidt and Rachel Reno, to join us and talk about educational technology. Exactly what we're still figuring that out, but it'll be good. And as Jason and Rachel always bring their A game, and we're looking forward to having them back. So,
Absolutely.
and we look forward to having you all back as well. We know you have a lot of choices with your time, but you chose to spend some time with us today, and really appreciate that. And would welcome you back next time as we talk about technology and ministry. Thanks, everybody. Bye-bye.